We're gonna do it.
We're gonna do this. We got this. Whoop 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 whoop.
So that was our hands clapping, by the way.
That was our hands.
So hi,
no
everybody.
Gun did not go off. There was no discharge of weapons. Nobody smacked anybody. We were high-fiving because we powered through today. Like, really.
Yeah.
This is episode 10 that we recorded today.
Yep.
And
we've only been at it for 8 hours.
I was going to say, we didn't start till something after 10.
We really, like, 7 hours because we ate a little bit. We've chatted. So, like, 7 hours.
Had a potty break. Had a lunch.
Well, I counted the lunch break.
A snatch. The lunch break.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister State. Ooh, it's getting better every time. Ooh.
Wait till we say it at the same frequency and it just sounds like one voice.
Have you ever heard the two girls, one ghost? Have you listened to their like intro?
No.
Because they're like, one of them will say it and the other one whispers it as they're saying it and it all comes together. It sounds really good. But you can tell like they do their stuff online a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes like they overlap one another. Like it's funny, but they're like, oh, that's where I'm like, oh, we got it. Like it sounds good.
That's nice.
But yeah,
I'll have funny. To check it out sometime.
The one's like, two girls, one ghost. And the other one's like, she's whispering it while the other one's saying it full frequency. It's pretty cool.
That's so interesting. Well, I'm gonna let you run with it.
Yeah, we're gonna go with it. Hi guys, we're back in Virginia.
Virginia.
Right.
Apparently it's for lovers, but I don't know why. Let me know.
Why is it? Why do they say that?
I don't know. I've also heard that Ohio is for lovers too, so
thought
that's a Hawthorne Heights song. You remember Hawthorne Heights?
I don't know. I don't know.
From my emo era when I was, like, circa 2006.
Oh, I possibly did.
Your brother probably knows.
I probably know who they are.
Ask Leon if he knows who Hawthorne Heights is.
The name sounds familiar. I probably know who they are, but you gotta think, 2006 has been in too long ago.
18 years ago.
You just threw that out there. You just gave it away.
The fact that I can audibly visually see in my head things that I did in like summer of 2006.
I graduated in 2007.
Stop. It just hit me. I had to do them at 18. People that were born in 2006 are 18 years old.
Dude. God. Graduated high school in 2004.
My
20 years. He's coming up on 20 years being out of high school.
My oldest brother graduated in 1994.
Yeah.
Yep.
My nephew was born in 1999. Come on.
My sister graduated high school in 1999.
And so, have you heard that they're not even, like, when they ID you in the store now, they're like, oh, you have a 19.
Yeah, you have a 19. You're good. Well, the thing about it is people born in the new millennia, 2000, they're going to be 24 years old this year. I remember being mind blown that people born in the 2000s were going to become full-fledged adults. They are almost in their mid-20s.
Dude. They weren't supposed to exist. It was all supposed to end.
In 2012.
In Y2K.
Oh, Y2K.
Yeah, cool. See, I survived Y2K when they had to shut everything down.
Yeah, because they thought that time would stop.
They thought that the time was going to stop. The world was going to end.
Even though this is not the first time that we've changed.
They told you to turn.
Centuries, but okay.
They told you to turn your TVs off, turn your computers off.
Yeah, what was so special between the 1900s and the 2000s versus the 1800s to 1900s and 1700s to 1800s? Like, what was the big difference? I don't know.
But it was wild. The world was going to end.
Yeah, but the world was supposed to end in 2012 with the Mayan calendar.
I was going to say the Mayan calendar, we were supposed to die. Like, you know,
we were all supposed to be wiped off the face of the earth 4 years ago, so with COVID. That's the way it was going.
I think it was just like, I don't know.
And you know what? Our population is just as big.
Right.
But apparently I'm not saying that it was a hoax or anything, but I'm saying like everybody was like so worried that like everybody was going to die and like everything. Our population is just as high.
Right. Well, it's getting higher because everybody's having babies. Oh, my God.
Not me. I'm not contributing to that.
I'm just saying in general, like, the population, like, the number of people that have had kids Like, have you not seen those videos like on TikTok? Just these women who are like in their 40s that are like randomly like, oh, I'm pregnant and I've got grown kids. What is going on? Like, I'm like,
Well, you didn't go through menopause and you had at it, so congratulations.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm just saying. What was I gonna say? I
anyways,
forgot.
long story short, we're in Virginia, guys.
Yeah, and I'm gonna stop talking so that I don't drag out because I know you have a goal.
It's all good. So our missing person is Melissa Lee Brannon. She's been missing since December 3rd, 1989. Hey yo, I was like a wee babe.
You were like 9 months old almost.
Was a wee babe.
A wee babe. You were almost one.
Yeah. Anyway, she was missing from
You
Lorton,
were older than
Virginia.
Zorro is. Sorry, go ahead. He's
You're
seven and a
fine.
half months old.
So she was 5 when she disappeared. Her birthday is April 13th, 1984. At the time of her disappearance, she was 3 foot tall and weighed 38 pounds. She was last seen in a pink hooded jacket, a navy blue acrylic JCPenney sweater with red and blue plaid sleeves. Totally 80s, my
Yep.
goodness. Navy blue cuffs. And a yellow applique of the Sesame Street character Big Bird on the front. I loved Big Bird, y'all. And a red and blue plaid cotton skirt with red tights and black patent leather shoes with gold bows. I just want to know where they were taking her to because she was dressed to the T and looking cute. At the time, there was an associated vehicle, which was maroon Honda, that has since been accounted for. The distinguishing characteristics is she's a Caucasian female with light brown hair and blue eyes, and she does have a burn scar on her right forearm. So,
Melissa.
Melissa, I really just got all tongue-tied. Melissa was last seen at a holiday party in the Woodside Apartment Clubhouse at approximately 10 p.m. on December 3rd, 1989, in Lorton, Virginia. Her family resided in the apartment complex. Melissa and her mother were about to leave the party, but Melissa went to get some more potato chips before they left and was never seen again. There were approximately 80 guests present at the party at the time. 80 guests, and nobody knows where she went.
Right. That's likely.
Caleb Daniel Hughes emerged as a suspect in Melissa's case almost immediately. Hughes was employed as a groundskeeper at Woodside Apartment at the time of her disappearance. He had worked there for only about 2 weeks. He was a guest at Melissa's family's party the evening of her disappearance and had been sitting near her when she was last seen. And left approximately the same time that the child was discovered missing. He had a criminal record prior to her disappearance, but not for violence, for violent or sexual offenses. Investigators looked for Hughes right after Melissa's disappearance was discovered, but did not find him until 1 a.m. the next day. He had already put his party clothes in the washing machine. The FBI took blood, hair, and fiber evidence from his maroon Honda and tested it in a forensic laboratory. The laboratory found that Melissa could be a source for the hair and the blood stains which were found on some tissues in the car, but so could 40% of the general population. Because you got to think, back then they didn't have the type of DNA testing we have now. Further testing ruled out Melissa as a source for the stains. However, rabbit hairs found in the car matched Melissa's rabbit fur jacket, and there were many blue fibers that matched her sweater and some red fibers consistent with her skirt. Hughes was convicted of abducting Melissa with the intent to defile in 1991 and was sentenced to 50 years in prison. He has always maintained his innocence in her case, and he was an exemplary prisoner for most of his term and accumulated enough good behavior credits to shorten his sentence. As a result, he was released from prison in August 2019 after serving 29 years of his sentence. Two other men were convicted of attempting to extort ransom money from Melissa's mother shortly after her daughter's disappearance. The individuals were not connected to her actual abduction. Melissa has never been located, but foul play is suspected in her case due to the circumstances involved. So, if you know anything about Melissa Lee Brannon's disappearance,
Say something.
say something.
Not to
See
us, though, because we can't.
something, say something. Yeah, don't tell
Seriously.
me. We just want to raise awareness. All right. So this case is wild.
Yeah, you warned me. I'm ready.
We're going to be going to different states.
Okay.
But most of it happens in Virginia. That's the reason why I chose it.
Okay.
So Oceana was the name.
Oceana.
Oceana. Oceana.
Oceana. That's kind of pretty.
Whose birth took place in September of 1885.
Oh God, you took it back.
Yeah, I did. We're going in the Wayback Machine, but this one's wild.
Okay.
So they're not 100% sure where she was born, but they're thinking most likely New York City.
Okay.
So she had an interesting family background. Her parents were Caroline Bell Wardlaw. You might want to write all this down.
I don't have any paper.
Okay. And Colonel Robert Maxwell Martin. He was a former Confederate soldier during the Civil War. And Oceana's mother, Caroline, had a career in education, but faced some challenges due to her unstable behavior, which led to her often being removed from a position serving in the school.
Who these people?
So we have Oceana,
She's a girl.
right?
Okay.
And Caroline Wardlaw is her mother. And the daddy don't matter because he's gonna be gone here in a little bit.
Okay. So Oceana is the daughter and Caroline Wardlaw is the mama.
Right. I just want you to be able to keep up with this because it's wild.
Okay.
So during that time, OC was a common and accepted nickname for Oceana. So that was her nickname. She went by OC.
Okay.
So Caroline Bell Wardlaw had three sisters,
Okay.
each with their own unique stories.
Okay.
So you have Mary Elizabeth Long Wardlaw, who is the oldest sister.
Hang on.
I probably should have made like a chart.
So she's the oldest.
Right. And she married Fletcher Sneed.
Okay.
I just want you to make sure that you have all this because these people, these names are going to come up.
Okay, I put hubs.
Right.
Okay.
The second sister is Virginia
Oh, this is easy.
Oceana Wardlaw. So I'm assuming that OC was named after her.
Mid-sis.
So she never married and was also
Single.
involved in the field of education.
Teacher. Okay.
So the third sister was Bessie Gertrude Wardlaw. But you don't really have to put her down because she does not matter. But
Does
she
no
does. She's not part of the story.
okay. Well, I already wrote her, so I also
Oh,
wrote,
it's
does
all
not
good.
matter.
So she had a different fate and she married a man named Richard Spindle. Okay.
Richard, just in case.
Yeah. So this part here, there are two brothers, but you don't have to write them down. I just want you to be able to keep up with the sisters.
Okay.
So in addition to the sisters, there were two brothers in the Wardlaw family, John Banks Wardlaw, who worked as a journalist and taught at the Christianburg School alongside his aunt and sisters. And he married Mary Elizabeth Lizzie Davidson, and tragically, both John and Lizzie passed away in the Christ in Christianburg while John was working as an English language professor at the school.
Okay.
The second brother, Albert Goodall Wardlaw, took a different path and became a reverend, and he married Harriet Lee Field and had no involvement with this school whatsoever. Okay?
And I don't need to write them down.
No.
Okay.
That should be all the notes you're going to want to take, but it might get a little weird here for a while, so you might need to write some more stuff. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, all of these siblings were the children of Martha Elizabeth Wardlaw and John Baptist Wardlaw. John Baptist was not only a minister, but also served as a justice in the South Carolina Supreme Court.
Nice.
Right. Caroline, Mary, and Virginia were known for their peculiar habits of dressing in black and behaving secretively. That's why they're known as the Black Sisters. So, interestingly though, strange deaths seem to follow these women in their later lives. So, Montgomery College, this is in Virginia, okay? So, this is where we're starting our official story. I gave you the key players. Now, here we go. So, Montgomery College has a rich history dating back to 1853 when it was first established as the Montgomery Collegiate Institute in Christianburg, Virginia. So initially owned by the Christiansburg Presbyterian Church, the school operated out of the old church building located on the corner of First and Franklin Street. And in 1860, a new school was constructed on the current site and was renamed the Montgomery Female Academy. Oceana Seaborn Goodall Pollock, who was Martha Elizabeth Wardlaw's sister, acquired the school in 1876 through a public auction. At that time, she was also a teacher at the academy, so she literally just bought the school and started teaching there. The 1880 census records show that Miss Pollock, her niece Virginia Wardlaw, so the aunt, OC's Aunt Virginia, and her nephews John B. and Albert Wardlaw were residing at the school. So Virginia was listed as a teacher there, and unfortunately, tragedy struck as we talk, and John and his wife Lizzie passed away in their 20s. And Virginia and Mary later returned to Tennessee, but then they came back to Virginia a few years later. So their younger sister, Bessie Spindle, was already living in the area with her husband, Richard, who was a well-known local businessman. And by 1900, Bessie was serving as the principal at the academy. Okay, so Bessie was working there too, but she's not involved later like the others are. So Miss Pollock, as she grew older and frail, she transferred ownership to the school to her sister Martha Wardlaw and her niece Virginia. With the financial resources inherited from their father, Virginia and Mary, along with Martha's cash inheritance, the school was renamed the Montgomery Female College. So the peaceful atmosphere, though, was disrupted when Caroline,
This is
OC's
the
mother, comes in and she takes over the administration and made some drastic changes that caused tension among the sisters and the school community. So earlier I had told you that her older sister, the oldest sister, Mary Elizabeth, married Fletcher Sneed. Well, they had two sons. They had Fletcher and John. So Fletcher and John at this time made the decision to start a sawmill business in Linville, Tennessee. They were not only business partners, but they were also brothers and brother-in-laws as they married the daughters of a well-known local lawyer named J.R. McLaurin. John tied the knot with Anna McLaurin in 1903, while Fletcher was already married to her sister, Vashti, back in 1899. It seemed like a perfect setup for the two men working side by side and sharing family ties. However, things took a drastic turn when Caroline Wardlaw, the aunt,
Isn't
enters the
she the
picture.
administrator
Right, but
of the school? And now
she is
she's coming to the
coming to
sawmill?
Tennessee. Right.
Dang, she sounds like a control freak.
Well, she's the aunt. And it's question of like history is kind of questionable about how things escalated here because it's rumored that, well, so she visited John in Linville and tried to convince him to come back with her to Christiansburg to teach at the school. Despite his wife's pleas for him to stay, John stood his ground, wait a minute, I just missed the whole line. Initially, he refused to leave, but then later on, he even had to resort to involving the police to remove Caroline from his house. But it was clear that John was determined to protect his marriage and his home from any potential threats. But unfortunately, Caroline's persistence paid off in the end. Despite his wife's pleas, John eventually gave in and accompanied her back to Christiansburg, leaving his wife behind. And so I couldn't find 100% the whole story, but it is rumored that potentially she, like, put the moves on her nephew to get him to come back.
That's disgusting if
I'm
that's
just
true.
saying, but, like, I
First of all,
want
Auntie, get your titties out my face. Sorry,
to.
I'm gonna cut that out.
So,
But I had
this,
to say that
yeah.
because that just gives me the ick.
So, this decision took a toll on Anna as her health began to deteriorate, leading her to be placed in a sanatorium.
As she deserves, because if you be putting the moves on your nephew, that's kind of gross.
No, not the aunt. This was
I thought you said the
his
aunt.
wife. His wife ended up in the sanatorium after he left her.
Oh, I misheard. I'm
No,
so
you're
sorry.
fine. Yeah, and so John found himself under the control of his aunt, unable to resist their influence. John's mental state also took a turn for the
This
worse.
sounds like black magic.
There are two incidents that raise suspicions of suicide attempts. The first occurred when he fell off of a train near Roanoke while traveling with
I
Caroline.
thought Roanoke was lost.
I don't know. Apparently, there's a city of Roanoke in Virginia,
There
too.
is, but I thought that that's the.
That was off the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Oh, my bad.
You're all good. Although they claimed it was an accident, the brakeman believed otherwise, thinking it was a deliberate act that, like, he was pushed off.
I mean, it's possible.
Shortly after John was rescued from his cistern just in time to prevent drowning. So Virginia Wardlaw was the one who sounded the alarm this time, clarifying that John was actually measuring for a water supply for the skull, like she tried to say, like he was covering it up, like that nobody was trying to hurt him or anything. But then, are you ready for it? Here's where it gets weird. Now, keep in mind, this guy is Mary's son, okay? The oldest sister. A week later, another alarming incident took place. Virginia once again raised the alarm early in the morning, and John was discovered in his room, engulfed in flames as his night clothes caught fire.
Ew, that's
Despite
unfortunate.
efforts to save him, he succumbed to first-degree burns 3 hours later. The sisters maintained that it was an accident, not a suicide, and eventually received a substantial insurance payout of $12,000 at that time, which in they've got it notated here in 2022, that was $390,844.
Wow.
However, it was later revealed that they had intentionally set him on fire while he was asleep to cash in on his insurance money. So she loved him up, brought him back just to whack. So they can get some moolah.
Insanity. Not shocking though. These people sound crazy.
So then here's where it gets. So we're going to backtrack just a smidge. So as John's final months were unfolding, Caroline, little Aunt Caroline, she embarked on a journey to Lindbergh, urging Fletcher, the other brother, to accompany her to Louisville to address some family property matters. Meanwhile, Vashti, his wife, received distressing news that Fletcher had fallen gravely ill in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Determined to see him, she made her way to Chattanooga, only to be met by res with resistance from Caroline, who insisted that Fletcher was too unwell to receive visitors. However, a week passed without his return, and contrary to Caroline's assurances that he was okay, it prompted her to make a second trip to Chattanooga. So the wife goes back, and it was during this visit that she stumbled upon the truth that Fletcher had been relocated from one boarding house to another under the care of a woman who matched Caroline's description. So she ends up returning home after a considerable period of time. She ends up divorcing him, and Fletcher, they took Fletcher back to the college.
Wow.
Yeah. So, subsequently, Fletcher was taken back to the college and found love again, marrying none other than his cousin, Osi.
Yeah, I knew she was coming back.
Yep.
Yep, as soon as you said none other, it was Oceana.
Yep. So, in the year 1906, their wedding took place in Louisville, Kentucky, as Osi exchanged vows with her first cousin. Ugh.
Disgusting.
So Fletcher
Even for
Wardlaw's
that time
name,
period.
right?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the wedding was shrouded in secrecy due to initial opposition from their family members. However, as time went on, the sisters were eventually won over, leading to a second ceremony on January 13th, 1908, in Jersey City, New Jersey, just before the arrival of their first child.
Inbred baby.
So Oshie and Fletcher's union did provide them with two children, but Mary Alberta Sneed was born in 1908 and she passed away not long after birth. And David Pollock Sneed in 1909.
Did he
So
live?
we're going to get into that.
Okay.
because this is a long story. So during the 1880s, Fletcher resided in Georgia. No, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm backing up too far now. Sorry.
We didn't hear about Fletcher in Georgia.
Right. Hold on. I'm sorry. It just threw me way off. This is a little bit about his backstory of Fletcher. So obviously, we know his parents were in 1880s. He resided in Georgia with his parents. And prior to his marriage to Ocey, he was married to Vashti in Linville, Tennessee. And together they had a child named Robert Tillman Sneed. So he did have another child that was older than the two with Ocey. So Vashti did go on though to move. She ended up going to Muskogee, Oklahoma in 1920 and eventually settled in Palm Beach, Florida in the 1930s with her son. And her son is remained in Florida from that point on. So that's just a little backstory on them. So the trio of sisters, okay, they had engaged in a series of deceitful business transactions across Christiansburg, Virginia, and its neighboring areas, causing the locals to lose faith in them and leading to widespread speculation about their activities. Whispers began to circulate throughout town, suggesting that the sisters were involved in ceremonies at the
Black magic.
Sunset Cemetery
Black magic.
in Christiansburg,
I called it black magic.
particularly near the grave of their late brother and his wife, their late brother John and his wife Lizzie.
Black magic.
As a result of these rumors, the attendance at the local school plummeted, creating a chaotic atmosphere within the classrooms. By the year 1904, the Montgomery Male Academy had shut its doors, forcing male students to now enroll in the Female Academy, which was subsequently renamed Montgomery Hall. The school fell victim to
I've heard of
vandalism,
that.
and by 1908, the three sisters, along with Fletcher and O.C. Sneed, decided to leave Christiansburg behind and relocate to New York City and New Jersey. So, following the tragic loss of their first child, and with O.C. expecting their second, Fletcher Sneed made a sudden move to Canada using an alias, severing all ties with his wife and leaving her under the care of her mother and two aunts. Osi had always been subjected to mistreatment by her mother and her aunts, who had allegedly attempted to deprive her of food and sustenance since her infancy. So she always had that issue. So with her husband gone, Osi's health began to deteriorate rapidly. Dr. William Petit was summoned to attend to the ailing pregnant woman, diagnosing her with symptoms of depression, severe weakness, and malnourishment. He noted that Osi appeared fearful and despondent in the presence of those around her, a troubling sign of her declining mental and physical state. The doctor made numerous visits to the Wardlaw house in order to ensure that Osi was receiving proper care. However, he was repeatedly disappointed to find that his instructions were not being followed by the sisters. Frustrated by their lack of cooperation and the fact that they were not compensating him for his services, the doctor eventually decided to stop visiting altogether. It was during this time that the sisters sought the help of another doctor, who, upon witnessing OC's deteriorating condition, took it upon himself to secretly provide her with food. Despite his efforts, Virginia, one of the sisters, forcefully expelled him from the premises when he attempted to check on OC after the birth of her baby. Feeling helpless and desperate, Dr. Petit sought legal advice from a lawyer who informed him that there was nothing that could be done to rectify the situation. However, several months later, he received another summons to visit OC once again. To his dismay, he discovered that her condition had worsened significantly since his last visit, and she was no longer the present or was no longer pregnant. The baby named David had been taken to a hospital due to his poor health. Eventually, the sisters made the decision to place David in an orphanage, but tragically, he passed away at just 9 months old
Oh, buddy.
and would later be laid to rest beside his mother.
Poor baby.
So, in a surprising turn of events, Virginia instructed Dr. Petit to inform O.C. of her impending death and to encourage her to create a will.
It's usually how it goes.
However, instead of following Virginia instructions, Dr. Petit arranged for a nurse to be brought in to care for Osi. Unfortunately, the nurse's presence was short-lived as the sisters promptly had her removed from the premises. And then rather than paying the doctor $100 for all of the services that he had done as well, the sisters made a rather unusual offer. They proposed to make him a $1,000 beneficiary in OC's will.
That's
Declining
so
their offer,
random.
Dr. Petit became suspicious of the family's motives and believed that OC was somehow being manipulated under a hypnotic influence. Little did he know that OC's mother and aunts were administering unnecessary doses of morphine to her.
Not shocked. They're
Right.
black magic and hateful women.
When Petit returned to check on OC before reporting the case to the police, he was shocked to find that the house was abandoned and the sisters were nowhere to be found. That's right, they moved. Once they realized that doctor was gonna turn him in, they packed it up and moved. So the family resurfaced in a different neighborhood of Brooklyn in September of 1909. Virginia, dressed in a somber attire with layers of black veil, sought the assistance of Julius Carrabba, a prominent New York attorney. Her purpose was to help a dying woman, OC, in preparing her last will and testament.
I'm sure that was the intention, oh
The
yeah.
atmosphere in the room was heavy with prayers as OC's mother and aunts chanted solemnly by her bedside. Once the prayers concluded, Virginia broached the subject of a new will with OC, who agreed to the idea. Concerned for OC's well-being, Carrabba suggested that she needed medical attention and nourishment. However, the sisters confessed their inability to afford either. Sensing their desperation, he kindly offered to write them a check. Seizing the opportunity, he engaged OC in conversation while the sisters left the room to find a pen. OC confided in Carrabba, revealing her impending demise. She reached under her pillow and handed him her will.
A real will?
Her real will, which bequeathed everything to her grandmother and appointed him as the executor. The sisters, eager to secure their own interest, proposed a substantial sum of $7,000 to Carrabba in exchange for making them the beneficiaries instead of her grandmother.
None for you.
However, he declined their offer, prompting the sisters to sever ties with him as their attorney. And in October 1909, Virginia was served as a defendant in a lawsuit for non-payment on the price of a new piano that she had bought. So she got this piano, didn't pay for it, and so they were coming for their piano. You gonna pay me my money? And
Or we
so
go repo.
her response to the plaintiffs that were suing her was, "Wait until we bury our dead." At this time, OC was near death from lack of food and medical care and had been moved to an apartment at 89 East 14th Street in East Orange, New Jersey. There was no heat or gas for cooking, and the place was furnished with just two cots, a rug, a chair, and a barrel for a table. The police were called by the family on November 29th, 1909, and told that there was an accident. The police then sent a physician to their home. Virginia led Dr. Herbert M. Simmons, the assistant county physician, to an upstairs bedroom where OC's naked body was sitting in a tub of water and her head tilted under the faucet.
Oh my gosh.
A suicide note pinned to her clothes was beside the bathtub, and it reads as follows.
They thought that she drowned herself. Stop. That's the worst way to try and frame that.
"Last year, my little daughter died. Other near and dear kindred too have gone to heaven. I long to go there too. I have been ill and weak a very long time now. Death will be a blessing, blessed relief for me in my sufferings. When you read this, I will have committed suicide. My sorrow and pain in this world are greater than I can endure. OCWM Sneed." So OC was buried on December 7th, 1909, at Mount Hope Cemetery beside her father, 7-year-old brother, and 2-day-old infant daughter, Alberta. And of course, her infant son, David, who had been taken, was he died July 18th, 1910, and at the age of 9 months, and he was buried beside her as well. But Simmons had a gut feeling that something was off about Virginia's responses regarding OC's death, and he couldn't shake the suspicion. So he decided to take matters into his own hands and called the police to launch an investigation. The cause of OC's death was determined to be drowning, but it was also discovered that starvation had played a role in her demise. This revelation only intensified the suspicion surrounding her family, especially her mother and two aunts. When the investigators arrived at the home, he immediately noticed that it was unusually cold and seemed vacant. And it was evident that the victim had been dead for at least a day. which raised questions about why it took so long to discover the body. This delay became a focal point for the investigator, fueling their curiosity and desire to uncover the truth. As the investigation progressed, the evidence against the sisters began to pile up. Multiple life insurance policies have been taken out on OC, pointing towards a potential motive for murder. Additionally, several suicide notes were found in the possession of OC's mother. Her mother.
Multiple suicide notes. Right, because she kept writing them and then discarding them, I'm sure.
All written in a similar hand and style as the alleged suicide note left by OC herself. Her own mother wrote the suicide note.
Yeah, this family's crazy.
The family's treatment of OC prior to her death also raised eyebrows, further strengthening the case against them. With all this evidence in hand, the authorities had no choice but to arrest and charge all three sisters with murder. The aftermath of the trial brought about different fates for each of the accused. Virginia Wardlaw tragically starved herself to death while awaiting trial in prison in 1910. Go figure. Tragedy. Caroline Martin, her mother, on the other hand, chose to plead guilty to manslaughter during her trial, which led to her being sent to jail. Eventually, she was transferred to an insane asylum where she passed away in 1913. So, Mary Sneed, however, managed to secure her release on a technicality since there was no specific charge for being an accomplice to manslaughter at that time. So, she decided to start anew in Colorado.
We love Colorado. We did
living
Colorado.
With her youngest son, Albert Charles Sneed. Later, they relocated to California, where Mary eventually passed away in 1937. So here's just a quick rundown of everyone involved and kind of a synopsis of what they did, okay? So we had Fletcher Wardlaw Sneed, who was born in 1875, died in 1955. O.C.'s husband. And he was located under the name John Lucas, cooking at the New Murray Hotel in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, and was questioned about O.C.'s death. No incriminating evidence was found against him, and he was never charged in connection with his wife's murder. He died in Los Angeles, California, January 12, 1955, under his own name. So then, of course, we have Virginia Oceana Wardlaw, who was O.C.'s unmarried maternal aunt, who attended the Wesley College and was never married. She taught at the Price School in Nashville, Tennessee. Then in 1892, she became the head of the Soul. This is more of a little bit female college in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And then
I have a friend from there.
Yep. She moved to the Montgomery Female in Christiansburg, Virginia, and she died of self-induced starvation on August 12th, 1910.
What is with these people starving themselves?
While
Why
waiting
would you
for
want
her trial
like that?
To begin. I don't know.
That always baffles me when I hear that.
But the thing is, though, is her body was sent to Christiansburg for burial in the Sunset Cemetery. You know, that same funky cemetery where they were doing their seances.
Mm-hmm.
So, Caroline Bell Wardlaw Martin, who was O.C.'s mother, she had, of course, her career in education and at one point being removed from a position due to unstable behavior. She was considered to have been the instigator of her daughter's murder. And she pled guilty to a lesser charge of manslaughter as part of her plea bargain. She was sentenced to 7 years in prison and sent to the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton. She was declared mentally unstable on May 18th, 1912, and transferred to the New Jersey State Lunatic Asylum. So I'm sure that was a great place to be. In Trenton, where she died on June 20th, 1913. Years later, evidence emerged that suggested that she had poisoned her husband. You know, because remember we mentioned the dad, and I was like, mm-hmm. Well, we don't hear anything else about him. But it's rumored that she poisoned her husband to collect a $10,000 life insurance policy, which in 2022 was equivalent to $351,760. And then she was also, now, I said that OC had a seven-year-old brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is also suspected of pushing her seven-year-old son, Hugh Hodge Martin, who was born in 1881, died 1888, down a flight of stairs, for which she collected a $22,000 life insurance policy. So you're looking at, in present day, would have been over $700,000.
Mm-hmm.
So she was suspected of killing her husband, her son, and then being the main instigator in the death of her daughter, O.C. So then, of course, the last one was Mary Elizabeth Long Wardlaw Sneed. Who was O.C.'s maternal aunt and mother-in-law, and she was cleared off of all charges on technicality. Her oldest sister had pled guilty to manslaughter. Mary could not be charged as an accessory, So she moved to her son's ranch in Colorado and was living with her son in California when she died in October of 1937. So that is the Black Sisters and the twisted tale of how they murdered their niece and daughter.
That's
And
crazy.
daughter-in-law.
And husband and son.
And their
And we married
grandbaby. I mean, really and truly.
her cousin.
Well, I mean, the two of them, that was their grandbaby.
Yeah.
The two sisters, that would have been their grandbaby. And they, like, basically murdered him too because they starved her the whole time she was pregnant. So, like, he died sickly because they made him sick.
That's insane.
So, anyways, that is the sick and twisted tale. There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that one. That one was a lot to research, and I was like, that's why I was like, you might want to take notes of who's who.
That's crazy. Well, thank you so much.
I don't know that that's really worth thanking, but hey,
Thank you.
I think it was a good one.
I appreciate your hard
We
work.
went back to way back in the
Yeah, seriously. People are crazy. I'll never understand
day.
people that starve
People are
themselves
crazy.
to death.
Well, like that lady who has starved all the people.
Oh,
Starvation Heights.
yeah. That was crazy. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hopefully, you guys found it as interesting as I did and not as twisty and turny as I did.
Yeah, it was weird
It
for
was.
her. Lots of players. I just
Then they
can't
kept
believe.
taking him back to the dang school. Like,
Right.
leave the school alone.
Well, it's like they kept, like, I don't know, I'm like you, it's some kind of magic. They got
Black
the
magic.
people, they thought she
Black
was in a
magic.
trance too,
Black
remember,
magic.
so.
Seriously, but thank you so
Anyways,
much. I
that's it.
appreciate it. Well,
That's all I
guys.
got, guys.
Well, thank you so much. Please consider subscribing to our Facebook, Instagram, Patreon. Well, you don't have to subscribe to Facebook or Instagram, just follow us, but
Like us.
like us, subscribe, whatever it's called.
Share.
Like, follow, like. But consider subscribing to our Patreon. Shoot us an email if you have any interesting stories. SinisterStatesPodcast@gmail.com. Any parting words for the fans?
Lock your doors and stay away from your cousins. And if your aunt tries to show you body parts, don't do it.
That's fair. And as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Dun dun dun.